There is so much that goes into one bottle of wine. So much time, so many resources, so much careful thought.
This big body of water, Lake Michigan, it has so much love to give us.
I was the young generation, now I'm the old one. It's funny how that happens, you know?
I'm adverse to publications of wine to some degree because the people that are writing these articles are living in a vacuum.
Americans have embraced wine more. We've become more of a wine culture.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 331. This week, we feature Rich and Shannon Silvestrin of Silvestrin Winery, Napa Valley.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
While many folks know that the tasting of Paris put Napa Valley on the map, the fact is wine has been made there for quite some time. Rich Silvestrin's father bought land to farm way back in 1932. Today, Rich and his wife Shannon still grow wine under the family name, just off of Highway 29. We met with Rich and Shannon at the winery just a few weeks ago for a simple chat in the upstairs tasting room. You can also hear Rich on our Vino Lingo segment, defining the wine term, the NoJack 3000. So I'm here with Shannon and Rich Silvestrin. I'm going to give Shannon credit first here today. We're at the winery, which is Silvestrin Winery in Napa, right on Main Street, which is a very easy place to be found. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing good.
Fantastic.
Good. Thanks for taking the time. I really do appreciate it. We're in this lovely little tasting room. This is about as cozy as you can get. How long have you been here in this particular space?
The building was built in 2001. But I gotta give Shannon credit for designing what we have interior wise in here. But the tasting room was built in 2001. But going back even further, the winery was started in 1994, and the family's owned the vineyard here since 1932. So it took us a while to get into winemaking. We grew grapes for a long time, and it took us a while to figure that out. So we started making wine about 25 years ago.
Which is a common story for, you know, to start the vineyards first, which is kind of a chicken and the egg, maybe kind of, sort of. You got to start somewhere, and the best place to start is having vineyards, right? And that was by, would have been your great-grandfather?
Grandfather.
It was your grandfather. Wow. You guys predate a lot of people here.
Yeah, I mean, Rich's grandparents really got the ball rolling in 1932, and the property here was, farming was a way of life for them. So from 1932... until they had, you know, Rich's dad, and he was old enough to get involved in the vineyard. And all these years later, 1932, all the way until 1994, it was strictly a farming operation, and all the grapes were sold.
Which is, in the end, what wine's all about, is farming. Mm-hmm. Right, and drinking it.
Well, and I'll add to that. I mean, there's fewer and fewer of us that have been around as long as we have, although there's several that have been around a little bit longer than we have, but more and more, the multi-generational wineries and vineyards are, you know, being sold over time. So there's fewer and fewer of us at this length.
Yeah, and you look amazingly young for having been around for such a long time.
I know.
I had to say.
We're very tired, but we look good.
Yes.
Not bad for 87 years.
Not bad, no. I'm not going to go any further on that. And speaking of tasting, excuse me, I'm going to grab my SV because I forgot about it. Thank you very much. Cheers.
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 Earthy. Wow, that's good. Let's talk specifically. Now, I've had your wines in the past, and I'll be very frank. I'm a fan. I like what you make with your reds because I am a big red guy, although SB isn't also one of my favorite wines. But tell me about what you're making right now.
Primarily reds. Where we are here in St. Helena, just a perfect spot for the Bordeaux varietals, primarily Cabernet Sauvignon in our vineyard. But we do grow a little bit of Merlot and Cabernet Franc as blenders for our cab program. We grow Sangiovese, a little bit of Petite Syrah, And those two wines are, varietally, make a varietal Sangiovese and Petit Sirah, but also, I mean, I'm a real fan of Sangiovese, so we do a blended wine as well, Sangiovese, Merlot, Cab Sauv, and a little bit of Cab Franc, and we call it Retaggio, and that's a wine that is really made as a tribute to the family. My parents and grandparents who, you know, my grandparents had the vision to and took the risk to be here and buy land, and my parents took it over and made it available to the next generation, the third generation, really. And so because of them, we're able to do what we do. And so that wine pays tribute to that whole family heritage and legacy. But primarily, you know, the backbone of the wine, our wine business, is Cabernet Sauvignon.
It's interesting, though. Sangiovese is not a real common grape here in Napa Valley, which is ironic because there is such a heavy Italian background. Mm-hmm. But does that go back a ways, or is that something more current for you?
Actually, it's more current because there was no Sangiovese on the property back in the 1800s and even after my grandparents bought the land. But it's a grape that Shannon and I started drinking Chianti and Brunello's, long time ago.
Yeah.
And we really loved them, and so really wanted to play around with that varietal. And so we planted our first half acre of Sangiovese in 1996.
Wow.
And just started making a few barrels just to see what it could do. And what we found was Sangiovese grows extremely well where Cabernet grows well. So that's why there's not a lot of Sangiovese grown in Napa Valley. But because Cabernet grows well here and it's king. So
yeah.
Well, I imagine too, it's a different sell. Sangiovese is probably a little bit tougher to sell. Cabernet is going to bring in money and pay the bills.
Well, Sangiovese just warrants a little bit less of a price point. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't make sense when you have land that Cabernet grows so beautifully on to plant Sangiovese. And that's the luxury we have in owning the land here, that we can plant the varietals that we really love drinking.
Sure. How many acres are you farming all together?
Yeah.
We have two vineyards. We have our state vineyard, and then the Crystal Springs vineyard, which we have on a long-term lease. And the two vineyards together are about 32 acres.
Okay. It's a funny thing, too. I always try to get across to our listeners to realize farming 32 acres. It doesn't sound big, but it's a lot, isn't it?
It's a lot of work.
That's, especially when you're talking about care and feeding of the vines.
Well, Rich was on a tractor a couple hours ago, so he's cleaned up now. But, you know, this time of year, especially in spring, the vineyard is exploding. There's a lot of activity and a lot of tractor work that needs to be done.
Well, it's a challenge because we're small enough that it's hard to have a large full-time crew because you can't keep people employed full-time year-round doing that. But it's big enough that it's a lot of work for a very small crew, which we have. So there's times where it means all hands on deck and things need to get done. So it's challenging in that regard because we like to do everything ourselves. And so we do. We don't outsource farming, which means that the busy times are really busy for the small crew that we have. So if we were 100 acres or more, we would have it would be easier to keep a full size crew that could really cover things a little bit better. So that is a challenge. We're kind of like right in the middle of how many acres do we farm and then doing the wine as well. But it's great because we're able to have full control over our grape source for winemaking. So
that controls what it's all about when you get right down to it. Winemakers are control freaks, aren't they?
A little bit. I mean,
a little bit. It's the only way
I'd like to say I'm not, but I think Shannon might say different.
he's a little bit of a control freak and a neat freak when it comes to the winery.
Well, that's what it should be. I mean, that goes back to Andre and so many other people who taught everybody here, you got to have a clean winery. After all, it is a food, it's an agricultural product.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm glad I could tell you both that. As you look to the future, I mean, I could certainly say that the market drives you probably to a degree, but you already said you're making Sangiovese. I mean, how do you make these kind of decisions? Because it's got a weigh on you. It's got a weigh on the books, what you might change. You know, replanting to me makes my brain explode. I mean, how do you think about the future?
Well, I think that, and Rich will speak to this, but I think that the answer is pretty easy for him. He makes the wines that he wants to drink, and he grows the fruit to make the wines that he wants to drink. And it really is that simple. And we've had a lot of pressure over the years to make varietals that the market is asking for, but they aren't necessarily always varietals that Rich and I enjoy at home. And so he has you know, been pretty stubborn about sticking to his authentic self, saying that's not a varietal that I like to drink, and I'm not going to grow it, and I'm not going to make it.
Well, and it's a balancing act. I mean, you need to be sustainable, and so to be sustainable, you have to be able to sell your wine. That's one thing. Number two, you really have to grow the grapes. Since we farm our own grapes, we grow our own grapes, we have to grow grapes that actually work in the sites that we're on. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Cabernet Sauvignon we're in an area that it is the grape to grow. And so that's primarily what we do. Fortunately for me, I like Sangiovese, and we grow a little bit of that because it grows well here as well. But our real main focus is Cabernet Sauvignon, and that's our bread and butter. But like Shannon said, we're able to, I mean, I make wines I like to drink. And so they're in the style, you know, fit to my palate. And that's what we do with the Cabernet Sauvignon, the blending and the winemaking and the grape growing. But then again, you know, we do make a varietal Sangiovese. We make Sauvignon Blanc as our white wine. We make the Sangiovese blend called Retaggio. And they're wines that we are interested in. Mm-hmm. And I think the consumer sees and feels that, because when you believe in something and you do it to the best of your ability, it's going to show and people will believe you.
Well, it's about sincerity, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah, good point. You're the winemaker then, right?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, because, you know, these days, a lot of owners aren't winemakers. And I'm not sure if that's something you think about or even care about with other wineries. But you're kind of an anomaly anymore. Isn't that interesting?
Probably so, yeah. I mean, my degree is in plant science. I wanted to be a farmer and grow grapes, and that's what I started doing. And then immediately after college, transitioned into winemaking because it just made sense with our location and, you know, being involved in the wine industry and learning what it's all about. It just made sense to transition that way. So my original training is in plant science and grape growing. But to be the vineyard manager and winemaker, as well as the owner, it's, you know, it might be challenging for employees, but it is an enjoyable career.
Well, it's a different passion, obviously. I mean, your vested interest and all that. But was there a point as you're growing up? First of all, did you grow up near here specifically
at
all?
Mm-hmm.
And was there a time you wanted to escape?
No, never. I mean, as a kid, it was pretty great. As a little kid and a boy playing in the dirt and driving tractors and riding our mini bikes and driving, you know, the Jeep. And I mean, it was a lot of fun for sure. So I never felt like I wanted to leave. In fact, I remember in high school realizing that I wanted to live here. And if I wanted to live here, I needed to be involved in the industry. And so that was my chosen path.
Either that or you work at a hotel.
Exactly.
One or the other.
Well, at that time, there wasn't that many hotels.
No, there weren't, there weren't very many anything back
Not
then.
Not in the 80s.
No. And Shannon, you, are you from here originally?
I am. I'm a local girl. I grew up in Calistoga, just up the road. And still catch some flack for marrying a St. Helena boy. The two towns can be very different, but proud to be a local and loved growing up in Calistoga. I had kind of the opposite growing up than Rich. I didn't think I would stay. I wanted to go explore and see what was out there.
And she didn't. She moved away. She moved
very
St. Helena.
Far. Yeah, St. Helena.
Wow.
But I met Rich when I was 19.
I was going to ask you that. How did
I was
meet?
Actually going to school to be a nurse, and my mom introduced us. My mom had
really?
Met... Rich calls it an arranged marriage, but my mom worked at Hans. Well, she was a nurse, and she also worked at Hans Cornell Cellars during the summers, where Rich would come back from college and work there. And she just thought he was so charming and so lovely. And so she'd tell me when I was old enough, because Rich is a few years older than me. When I was old enough, she was going to introduce me to a really nice boy. And when I was 19, she arranged for us to meet. And that was about 28 years ago. We've been married for 25.
Oh, congratulations.
Three daughters, two in college, one in high school.
Yeah, we were talking about that before, but that word arranged just came up, didn't
yeah.
it? It is a tight-knit area, very different areas.
Very different. Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, kind of a different mindset, I guess you'd say. Calistoga reminds me a bit more of the Old West. Is that fair to say?
Calistoga is, I mean, it's such a lovely town, and it's growing and developing, and but really has maintained its small town character, and I love it.
Well, this brings up a really good question that I love to ask, and being that you're both from here, do you have worries, fears for the future because of growth, because of expansion, because of, you know, there have been more wineries open? I mean, how do you see that?
It's a double-edged sword. I mean, you have to manage growth, but it's inevitable. And that's the case anywhere. I mean, especially a region that's popular, everybody wants to be here. And, you know, everybody has a vision when they come, and they enjoy themselves, and it's beautiful and romantic and all these things. And so I don't begrudge anyone that wants to be here and be a part of it. But growth needs to be managed, and things need to balance. And so we just need to keep that in mind as things go forward, so that the atmosphere and the agricultural aspect of the valley doesn't disappear. But at the same time, we're able to sustain an industry over the long haul. And right now, you know, the pendulum swings one way and then back the other, and we get these issues that come up from time to time, and you know, like I said, the pendulum will swing a little bit too far one way, and I think that's what's happening right now as far as pushback on the industry. But you know, we just need to work together and find the balance and try and stay, you know, on the road that will sustain us long term, but keeps everybody, you know, not completely happy.
Well, I mean, in the end, the wine industry is what keeps this valley alive.
Right. So protecting,
and it always has.
So protecting the vineyard land from being chopped up and becoming, you know, a lot of small little parcels that have, you know, little mini McMansions on them, that's important. It's important to protect the land so that years to come, years from now, the Napa Valley is still the Napa Valley. We understand that, you know, it's a beautiful place, and we're so fortunate that we get to call it home. But if those protections aren't in place, then it'll just get destroyed.
Well, I'm sure you both have to be very thankful that there are protections.
Absolutely.
Especially as natives.
Absolutely. And there's also a balance, though, of you know, balancing how much vineyard and industry can the community support. And you know, that's a discussion for, it's a longer discussion than we probably have today, but it's one that has to be ongoing, because we can't be an industry without the community, and we need to work together, but there's got to be a balance.
Yeah.
And the industry has to understand that, and the community has to understand that as well, and they've got to be supportive of the industry, because that's what this valley is built on. So right now there's, you know, community and industry are a little bit at odds, but you know, we'll work it out, and it'll pass. I'm sure it
so
will.
We support healthy growth.
Well, and you've been very involved in this community, as I've read about you, which has got to put you in a really interesting position from time to time, because of that various idea. People are going to choose a side, and they don't want to move too much. So as an owner, as well as a winemaker, that must put you in a strange position from time to time.
It is. I was on the Farm Bureau, County Farm Bureau Board for 20 years, and in leadership in the Farm Bureau, and, you know, preserving agriculture and open space is a you know, near and dear to my heart, and been actively involved in that. And, you know, I'm not on the board now, but I'm still involved. And, you know, it's one of those things, like I said, we need to stay involved. We need to work together as an industry and a community, because, you know, that's the only way we're going to get anywhere long term.
That's a good answer, because that's how it has to be. Well, again, balance in the bottle, balance.
And it's ongoing.
The
I mean, it's never going to go away. There's always going to be issues. And, you know, every so often something will cycle, and there's an issue that has to be dealt with by both sides. And it's just a matter of understanding that, you know, you can't have one without the other.
Right.
So you've got to work together.
Right. Well, on a lighter subject, while we came up here, Shannon, you jumped into some guests you had out there, and they were asking the usual questions.
Yeah, there were some lovely guests from Phoenix, Arizona, down there.
I mean, do both of you get to interact very often with your guests?
Probably not as that. We do interact with them, but not as often as we'd like. I mean, we get busy with all of our own responsibilities, and it's hard to be out on the,
patio. So people love to taste downstairs in the patio, because it's out amongst the vines.
Sure.
But Rich and I try and make a point. I mean, we walk and back and forth between the winery and our house several times a day. So we try and make a point to always stop in on the patio like you saw me do, and check in with the guests, thank them for being here, ask them if they have any questions. I mean, we realize that that's not something they can get at every winery.
Sure.
And you know, I usually don't even say who I am.
I was going to ask you that question. Do you reveal that? Because there's a certain amount
not
of
at first.
Not at first. Yeah. Because I feel like it's a little pretentious sometimes.
Yeah.
And
well
so
said. Yeah.
I just want them to make them feel welcome. One of our staff members will usually say, this is Shannon Salvestren. And then the guests are like, usually pretty surprised that I've stopped in to say hello to them. But ultimately, we're thrilled that they're here. I mean, we realize, to your point, there's so many new wineries, and not even new, but so many wineries in the Napa Valley, and people have a lot of choices. So the fact that they come to the Napa Valley, they might have 2 or 3 days to spend here, and they're choosing to spend an hour or two with us, I mean, we're grateful.
Yeah, it's very cool. So it makes me kind of curious, when you do get a chance to spend any time interacting, what do you find from an educational point of view? I mean, I know you don't get a lot of time to spend with somebody, but what do you find the greatest challenge? Because I'm sure you get all kinds of wine lovers here, people who are experienced, people who are completely inexperienced, and of course those that are in between, and maybe the few that tell you your business. You know, what do you find though is the biggest challenge?
With guests or?
Well, you know, in education, in wine education, because in the end, the tasting room is about education.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
But the nice thing here, like Shannon said, I mean, you know, right outside the door here is the vineyard, and then on the other side of the door is the cellar. So when guests come here, as we progress in a conversation, take 2 steps out in the vineyard and we can explain to them what's going on in the vineyard right now. They can see the fruit at whatever stage it's at. And then we can take them into the cellar and they can see, you know, the equipment, where, you know, what the barrel room smells like, and, you know, maybe even taste some wine if we're doing a barrel tasting that day or something. But it's always fun to go out incognito and sit down and talk to people. And I always get a kick out of, before they know who I am, they're amazed at how much I know about vineyard and wine. So, but then like Andy or Eddie will let them know that.
Yeah.
Who anybody ever said to you, hey, you should do this for a living.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's really fun.
It's
really fun to be able to walk people out right to the vines, yeah, whether it's, you know, flowering or bud push or veraison or even right about harvest time where we can taste the fruit. I mean, there's not many places you can go, yeah, and just sit on the patio, taste the wine, and then walk out into the field 2 steps away and see what's happening in the vineyard right there.
Well, you know, one of the things I also think that's important when you're sitting down with guests is to create a level of comfort. And for me, especially when we're sitting down with young guests, you know, talking about what the process is and getting them to a point where they feel comfortable asking the questions that they all have. But they're so afraid, you know, there's such this, sometimes this snobby preconceived notion with winemaking. And so when they get comfortable enough to start asking the questions, it's great. Because we can kind of tonka-size everything here, like Rich was saying, here's the vineyard, here's the winery, here's the equipment. I mean, we're a small operation, but it's still all the same processes that all the big wineries go through as well. So we're really able to help people understand what the process is and just get them asking questions, and it's pretty great.
Sure, it's the there is no stupid question syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah. For all the years you've done media interviews or talked to people in print or otherwise, what's the question that you don't get asked that you'd really like to be asked?
That is a really good question.
Question that we don't get
asked.
Well,
here's the thing. Many of us who do things that we're passionate about, we love to talk about to the right people. You like to talk about wine people. Nobody wants to hear about audio, but 3 or 4 people, you know? You like to talk about it, but maybe there's part of it you don't. I've gotten some very interesting answers from people.
I mean, I'll let Rich speak for himself, but what I would say is, I would love it if people would ask, you know, what is a day in the life of a winemaker look like when you do have your own vineyard and you do have your own operation and you're hands-on in all the process? Like, what does a day look like for you in the spring? What does it look like in the summertime? What does it look like in the fall? I guess I always like to impress upon people how much work having a vineyard and winery actually is and how much of a farming operation it is. And it people like to romanticize the wine industry, and it is romantic and it is lovely, but there's a lot of work behind it.
Right.
And I guess that would be my answer. How about you?
Yeah, I guess, you know, It's a great question, and I guess I would, and I don't know how, I mean, I don't know even how to phrase it would be a question, but I think the point that I would like to make is, you know, if the question was asked, is how hard it is to sell wine, you know, and it, I mean, especially coming from, so basically I'm telling you the answer to the question you might have.
Sure, that's kind of what I wanted, actually.
Okay. So
what's the hardest part?
I have a production background, and I got into winemaking because I it was a natural progression to utilize the fruit that I grow, which is something I love. It's my passion, is to be out in the vineyard farming, growing the fruit, growing the crop. But to turn that into something that people can enjoy, and something that tastes good and I enjoy and other people can enjoy, not only is it rewarding for me, but it's seeing the, you know, the whole process full circle. But what you don't realize getting into this business is how hard it is to make that sustainable and to sell the wine. And coming from a production background, you know, the interviews are not something I seek. You know, trying to, you know, be out and promote the wine is not something I seek. But without that, it's very, very, even with that, it's very difficult to sell wine. Because you can get people here and you can talk to them on the patio and they can see what's going on and touch and feel and taste. And that's easy. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, everybody's got a story and everybody's got wine. There's so much of it out there now. It's just such a challenge to sell it. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's something that I don't think people really understand.
So selling
into the marketplace, yeah. And, you know, getting exposure and getting your wine, you know, in accounts or restaurants. And it's a really, really difficult thing, and it's very expensive. And so that's just something that you don't really realize when you're getting into this business from a production side and a, you know, romantic side, that it is really, really challenging.
Well, A, thank you for answering the question. But B, it's mostly your fault because you guys make it look easy. And that's really true. And that's really where you've really come ahead in the wine business. I think that's really something when you can stand back and say, yeah, I'm going back to work now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's a beautiful life.
I mean,
we've been able to raise our daughters in the vineyard, in the dirt, knowing, you know, for them to know where food comes from, where we always have a huge vegetable garden in our backyard. When our girls went to college, Hannah and Emma first went to college, and they were calling home asking us to send them tomatoes from the garden. And, you know, they have a very firm understanding of what's important and how hard, you know, how hard work pays off, because they've watched us do it all these years. So, you know, it's a great life.
Yeah. So I would say getting it to here is the easy part.
Yeah,
the easy part.
I understand that. So for this tasting room, are you by appointment or can people just wander on up?
We are by appointment.
Limited visitation by appointment.
Great. Yeah. And for our listeners to learn a little bit about you and to make an appointment, what is your website?
SalvestrinWinery.com. Or you can call us.
Yes, listeners, I'm prompting them. That's a telephone, Shannon.
I'm sorry. But the best thing you can do is come see us.
I totally agree. And it's a wonderful place to come and tucked away in just a nice little spot. So, Shannon, Rich, thank you both very much for meeting a little early with me today, as well as taking the time to chat. I do appreciate it.
You're welcome.
We appreciate
Cheers.
You.
Thank you for being
Your
here.
Interest. Yeah. Cheers.
All right.
Ooh, ouch.
Learn more by visiting SylvestrinWinery.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak and Catherine Shearer. Copyright 2019.